Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, October 19th, 2017. We'll start with a story titled "Aldermen Discuss Pension Debt." This is written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. City officials presented aldermen more information Tuesday night on a 22-year plan to pay off the city's police and fire pension debt that would include property tax and public safety pension fee increases for most people. Mayor Scott Eisenhower said senior citizens, veterans, and disabled persons would see a 50% discount on the public safety pension fee. Churches and persons now not paying anything in property taxes would pay $2,400 or $218 a year, respectively, under the tax levy plan. It's a huge step, Eisenhower said, about generating $9.7 million the first year and about $25 million by 2040 to tackle the city's public safety pension liability of more than $100 million. Eisenhower said the plan to retire the city's pension debt and continue to fund the library under the city's property tax levy is a way to segregate those costs. The tax levy scenario would have the city's property tax levy increasing from $2.04 per $100 assessed valuation to $2.26 per $100 assessed valuation. The city's 2017 tax levy would increase to $6.6 million from 2016's $5.9 million. This is a 10.85% increase. The city's equalized assessed valuation is estimated to stay the same at $291 million. A tiered annual public safety fee would range from $2,400 to $200 for commercial buildings and large residences based on net equalized assessed valuation. Residential properties and small businesses less than or equal to 5,000 square feet would see an annual fee ranging from $436 to $20 based on net equalized assessed valuation, which is a third of a person's property value and minus property tax exemptions. The fee would be discounted by 50% for some people. Pension payment growth is projected at 25% the first year, 16% the second year, and 9% the third year, followed by 3.25% growth each of the remaining 19 years. Library growth is projected at 2% annually. Revenue growth from the public safety pension fee and property taxes is shown as 10% increases each of the first 5 years, then 3% increases in the tax rate and fee each of the remaining 17 years. For a sample bill, the city property tax portion on a $60,000 fair market value house would increase from $286.02 to $316.44. In another sample bill, the annual $96 public safety pension fee would increase to $436 annually the first year for a house with a net equalized assessed valuation of less than $5,000, which total 3,747 properties. Eisenhower said with the combined property tax and pension fee changes, some people could be paying less, about $12 to $31 with some sample bills, and others would be paying more annually of $46 to $404 more in some sample bills. He said the first year will be a big hit for some people, but it's to be the starting line and have people pay similar costs between the two. This is a proposal to get a little bit more consistency in what residents pay in both property taxes and pension fee, Eisenhower said. He said this plan also tries to put the city on a path with reasonable growth rates. Eisenhower said if EAV revenue grows, what is left over would be needed in pension fee and property tax revenue through the years. Ward 2 Alderman Dan Duchesne said he applauds the city for having this plan to pay the pensions, but he said the poorest people would be paying $200 to $400 more a year. Duchesne asked if the city would look at changing the tiered pension fees more or have more revenue come from property taxes. He said he worries about those who are least able to pay the taxes and fees paying the most. Some aldermen also questioned whether landlords and will pass along the increased fees to tenants. Ward 7 Alderman Lloyd Randall said the tax and fee increases are a risk with the city's aging population, people leaving, salaries not keeping pace, and median income probably becoming lower. Eisenhower said they'd like to have a tax levy plan in place by November 7th to then put in on public display and schedule a public hearing. In other business, Tuesday, council members heard Captain Tim Hendricks at a fire division promotional ceremony, which saw six promotions, say it's an honor and a privilege to serve you and serve the city of Danville. They also approved an asbestos abatement contract for the former Lincoln School at 520 Chandler Street and also 714 Garfield Place. Danville Public Works Director Doug Ahrens said the city will perform the Garfield Place demolition in-house. The school building demolition is out for bid again due to previous high costs. The city did some asbestos abatement already in the building, and all floor tiles are being removed. They also amended an agreement for engineering services for the Northwest Pump Station Denmark Road project. They approved purchasing right-of-way for a detour for the Voorhees Street Bridge replacement project. They learned the storage units, facility, and Planet Fitness should open by the summer of 2018 at the former Kmart site. They also approved an agreement with the Vermilion County Land Bank Authority to market and sell city-owned lots, and they didn't act on an agreement for the lease of city-owned properties. Okay, the next story is titled, Quilters Make Placemats for Diners, and this is written by Mary Wyckoff, and there is a picture of Rose Walker Left, president of the Vermilion Valley Quilters, shows placemats to Laura Flessner, nutrition coordinator at CRIS, or C-R-I-S, Healthy Aging. At right is Jody Leggett, community outreach with Vermilion Valley Quilters. The Quilters presented the placemats to CRIS, or C-R-I-S, to give to clients with Meals on Wheels. And this is in Danville. Clients with CRIS Health Aging Meals on Wheels program will get an extra treat this week, a colorful placemat. Members of the Vermilion Valley Quilters created more than 225 placemats as part of a community outreach program. They presented three boxes to Laura Flessner, nutrition coordinator of CRIS, who said they will be distributed Friday to clients. Flessner was pleased with the gift, remarking how colorful and creative they were. I think it's just wonderful, she said. A lot of people don't have many visitors during the week, so the placemat will show them that people are thinking of them and doing things to help them feel special. Also, when a client sees a placemat in his home, he'll think about CRIS and what a wonderful program Meals on Wheels is, Flessner said, and spread the word to others. The placemats were divided into designs that might appeal more to women and those that appeal to men, as well as a box of designs for either gender. They've had fun creating, Jody Leggett, community outreach with Vermilion Valley Quilters, said of the 45 members. The placemats are made of colorful and unique patterns selected by individual quilters from their stash of fabric. Club President Rose Walker said there are a lot of people who are shut-ins. This is something that can help brighten their day, she said. This is a way to say we care. The club does projects as well. The Creative Covers group makes quilts for veterans, blankets for Fair Hope Ministry, and baby blankets for the Women's Care Clinic and Women's Shelter. They enjoy sharing their skills with others in Danville community, Leggett said. The placemat project started about a year ago. We're here for the community, Walker said. If they come to us, we like to help. Dream for a Cure. At a meeting Tuesday, the group heard a presentation from Jan Heck and Raquel Ham, both from the Springfield area, who are involved with Sadie's Dream for Cure. The two are looking for people to sew tote bags, which will be filled with toys and distributed to children fighting cancer. A downloadable pattern is on the website, or a person or group can request a kit with a pattern, fabric, and interfacing. The finished totes then are filled with games, stuffed animals, books, and other items, no food, to entertain sick children from babies up to age 18 who are spending time in a hospital. Scout groups and 4-H clubs from the Champaign area have helped with this program, Heck said. Heck and Ham have been involved for a couple of years and have made more than 400 totes. In August, they delivered 80 filled totes to the two hospitals in Indianapolis. People may drop off donations of toys, fabric, or money to Threads of Time in Danville. Everything has to be new because the items are going to sick children. The Vermilion Valley quilters were helping with the totes Tuesday, and another work day for anyone wanting to help is set for today at Threads of Time. Learn more at Sadie's Dream for a Cure website. FYI, the Vermilion County quilters meet at 9:30 a.m. the third Tuesday of each month at the Danville Public Library first floor meeting room. Anyone interested in quilting, whether a beginner or expert, is welcome to join the group. Next, haunted happenings return to Kennekuk in Danville. Haunted happenings returns to Kennekuk County Park Saturday, October 21st, and will feature new trails for the whole family. This Halloween tradition started in the 90s when Kennekuk County Park Executive Director Ken Konzas came up with the idea to host a community hot dog roast. Years later, they're still serving hot dogs, but they're also doing a lot more. The gates at Haunted Happenings will open at 6 p.m., and visitors will have the chance to take a hayride, play games, and explore the haunted trail at nightfall. Bonfires will ablaze throughout the evening to roast hot dogs and stay cozy. It's for the whole family, young and old, Konzas said. Even the youngest kids will have fun. The park is located on Henning Road, and Konzas said the open space makes Kennekuk the ideal location for an event like this. Tickets are $10 in advance or $15 at the gate. Proceeds will go toward the County Conservation District. This is one of our highest revenue producing events, Konzas said. There are always things that come up we need to pay for. Workers at Kennekuk County Park are hoping for good weather, he added, explaining rain has the potential to dampen the evening, but the current forecast looks for a haunting night of family fun. FYI, advance ticket sales are available at the Kennekuk Visitors Center, Forest Glen, Catlin Bank, Latos Hardware, and Danville Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. Next story is titled Holiday Help, Salvation Army to Kick Off Campaign, and this is written by Carol Roam in Danville, and there's a picture of John Woodard, director and pastor of the Salvation Army, and his son Zach place gifts on their float for the Night of Lights parade, kicking off their Red Kettle drive last season. Christmas might be more than 2 months away, but to those involved with the Danville Salvation Army, it feels like the holidays are right around the corner. Plans are already underway for this year's Red Kettle campaign, the Danville Corp's biggest fundraiser of the year, with volunteers being sought to ring bells during the busy holiday season. The Corp's at 855 East Fairchild Street, a United Way of Danville area agency, will kick off the Kettle campaign with a special dinner at 6:30 p.m. on November 7th at the Doves in Danville Banquet Center at 19972 Woodbury Hill Road. The Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin Cooperative High School Band will perform during the dinner. The fundraising event is open to the public and includes door prizes and a silent auction. The cost is $25 per person with a choice of pulled pork or baked chicken prepared by Applewood Catering. Reservations must be made by Tuesday, October 24th by contacting Lieutenant Faith Woodard or Sharon Salka at the Danville Salvation Army at 442-5911 or emailing at faithwoodard@usc.salvationarmy.org. The money from the dinner will go toward the Red Kettle campaign, Lieutenant John Woodard said, adding the mayor will put the first donation in the kettle. We would like to make it an annual event, he added. During the event, Woodard plans to honor community member Jose Velasquez, who is active with VFW Post 728, with an award for his many years on the advisory board of the Salvation Army. The Danville Salvation Army hopes to sign up many volunteers to help ring bells and hire as many as 20 to 30 paid bell ringers for the Red Kettle campaign when it starts November 10th, which is about 2 weeks earlier than past years. The volunteer bell ringers are needed between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. from November 10th to December 23rd to man 10 kettle sites around Danville and Tilton, as well as one location still to be determined in Georgetown. The kettle at the Danville Walmart won't be set up until the day after Thanksgiving. We'd like to have every location covered with volunteers on Saturdays, Lieutenant Faith Woodard said. Although either an 8-hour or 4-hour bell ringing shift would be optimum, Woodard said he would welcome volunteers' help for any amount of hours. Danville police officers rang bells in the middle of the campaign last year, and they loved it, he said. The application process for paid bell ringers already has begun and will continue throughout the Christmas season. We're taking applications now, Woodard said. They'll sign up here, and we'll interview them here. Bell ringers will be paid $8.25 an hour on an as-needed basis between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday. People ask if we're going to all volunteers, Woodard said. We really can't do that. We want to give back to the community. We have repeat people who count on this for their Christmas, he added. The Danville Salvation Army's overall goal for this year's campaign is $100,000, which is the same as last year's goal, and covers the local corps' day-to-day operations for a year, including social services, programming bills, employees' pay, food pantry, Christmas baskets and clothing vouchers, and helps citizens pay for utilities, rent, or shelter and medicine. Of the $100,000 goal, approximately $63,000 comes from the cattle donations. Mail, appeals, grant money, United Way money, and other donations make up the remainder. To help reach its goal, the Danville Salvation Army is promoting a new initiative that will entail placing a sign with the names or logos of local businesses, churches, or families next to one of the corpse's 10 kettles in exchange for a sponsorship donation and a match of the funds collected in the sponsored kettle on that particular day. We're trying to find businesses to match funds in the kettle challenge, said Carla Haga, who serves on the Salvation Army's advisory board. We want to find businesses who will stand up and ring bells at a kettle. The Danville Corps also seeks local businesses that will sell out a mini red kettle on its counter for collections. We have 6 counter kettles, and last year we had 3 counter kettles out, Woodard said. If we could have all 6 out this year, that would be awesome. We hope with the kettle sponsorships and the counter kettles, we'll smash our goal, he says. Woodard added he is optimistic about this year's Red Kettle campaign. We are fortunate and blessed we have a community that supports us, he said. To help, anyone interested in being a paid bell ringer for the Danville Salvation Army may apply at 855 East Fairchild Street between 9 a.m. and noon and 1 to 4 on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. Anyone interested in volunteering for the Salvation Army or any business interested in sponsoring a kettle or picking up a counter kettle could call 442-5911. A special kickoff dinner is set for 6:30 p.m. on November 7th at Dove's in Danville Banquet Center at 19972 Woodbury Hill Road. It is open to the public. The cost is $25 per person, with a choice of pulled pork or baked chicken prepared by Applewood Catering. Those who can't attend but still want to make a donation so others can attend may do so. Reservations must be made by Tuesday, October 24th by contacting Lieutenant Faith Woodard or Sharon Saka at the Danville Salvation Army at 442-5911 or emailing at faithwoodard@usc.salvationarmy.org. Okay, we'll run through the obituaries real quick. James Marcus Hurley, 4 months old, left his heartbroken family on Monday, October 16th at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of Jamie's life will be held at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday, October 21st at Holy Cross Catholic Church, 405 West Clark Street in Champaign, Illinois. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. on Friday, October 20th, at Sunset Funeral Home, 710 North Neal Street in Champaign. Memorial donations may be made in Jamie's name to Children's Hospitals of Illinois Pediatric Intensive Care Unit. Please join the family at www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. Aud H. Mick McMillan III, 75, of Danville, passed away at 3:32 p.m. Monday, October 16th at Presence Covenant Medical Center in Urbana. Funeral services at noon on Saturday at Robeson Chapel in Catlin, with Pastor Matt Felisky to officiate. Burial at Oak Ridge Cemetery in Catlin. Visitation is from 10 a.m. till service time on Saturday at Robeson Chapel. Memorials to St. Jude's Hospital in memory of Jenna McMillan. Cliff Cundiff, 53, of Danville, passed away October 17th at Altman Hospital in Canton, Ohio. A celebration of Cliff's life will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, October 20th, at Sunset Urbis Chapel at 414 South State Street in Westville. Visitation will be held from noon to 2 prior to the service. Burial to follow at Songer Cemetery in Tilton. Terry Wayne Gurney, 69, of rural Kingman, died at 9 a.m. Wednesday, October 18th, at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. EDT time Friday, October 20th, at First Baptist Church in Covington, Indiana, with Andy Harkle Road officiating. Burial in Danville National Cemetery. Visitation 8:30 a.m. until time of the service at 10:30 a.m. Memorials to American Diabetes Association, First Baptist Church, American Legion, or VFW, with envelopes available. Constance Ambrose Martin, 89, died October 10th in the house where she was born in Westville. A celebration of Connie's life will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, October 21st, at Sunset Urbis Chapel at 414 South State Street in Westville, with Father Loftus officiating the service. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday, October 20th, at the funeral home, with rosary prior to the visitation at 5:30 p.m. Burial will be in St. Peter and Paul Cemetery in Westville. Memorial donations may be made to the Westville Public Library. Perry Garrison, 78, of Georgetown, died Tuesday, October 17th. Funeral services will be at noon on Saturday at St. Mary's Catholic Church, 231 North State Street in Westville. Burial will be at St. Paul and Peter and Paul Cemetery in Westville. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. Saturday until services at the church. And Constance, no, we did her. That'll be it for today. Sorry. Okay, the next story is titled Dogs Pose Threat to Others' Dogs. Canine attacks two others, killing one. This is in Danville, written by Tracy Crane. A Vermilion County Board Committee plans to discuss dangerous ordinances tonight after three Danville residents complained about a dog that allegedly attacked one dog twice and killed another, but the county's attorney is not sure any changes would have altered the outcome. Everyone is concerned about it, but it's hard to know what the solution is, said Bill Donahue, the county's legal counsel. Victoria Heiss, Kim Ratliff, and Cynthia Esworthy will all live in the Rabbit Town neighborhood in Danville and spoke at the September 12th Vermilion County Board meeting, telling board members about a pit bull in the neighborhood that had been reportedly escaping from its property and attacked Esworthy's collie on her property on two different occasions, August 15th and 28th, injuring it badly. The same dog then attacked Ratliff's husband, Husky, on September 8th, and that dog died as a result, according to Esworthy, who explained that they believed the county's animal control department didn't handle the situation aggressively enough. She said they believed there should be stiffer ordinances that prevent an aggressive dog from getting loose and attacking other dogs multiple times. The city of Danville has a contract with the Vermilion County Animal Control Department to enforce its animal ordinances, but it's the city that writes its own ordinance and the city council that approves them. But the County also has animal control ordinances, and said Donahue. And Donahue said the county's mirror the state statutes that cover declaring dogs dangerous or vicious. He said those local and state laws detail a process that must be followed in determining whether a dog is dangerous or vicious, and detail an appeal process for owners, and the entire process takes time. Every time there's an incident, you want to go back and look at things, but it's a difficult situation, because how do you protect all the owners and animals and still have due process rights, said Donahue. David Wessner, corporate counsel for the city of Danville, said unless you immediately euthanize a dog, there's always a possibility for another incident to occur. The requirements of the ordinance once a dog is declared dangerous don't guarantee, he said, that the owner will actually comply with those requirements. We set our ordinances up the best way we can to avoid these scenarios, but you can't protect against everything, he said. According to the state statute, an animal control administrator has up to 10 days to notify a dog owner of an infraction and subsequent investigation that includes gathering medical or veterinary evidence and interviewing witnesses and making a detailed written report, as well as giving the owner the opportunity to meet with the administrator prior to any determination being made whether a dog is dangerous. And if a dog is declared dangerous, the owner has an appeal process. The issue is up for discussion at the County Board's Health and Education Committee meeting tonight, and Donahue said county officials will be looking for any good ideas. Maybe someone will have one, he said, adding that there is heightened awareness about this issue, but it's difficult to know what can be done and that's not already addressed in the statute. I'm not aware of a solution that's better than the state statute at this point, he said. Okay, next. City of Danville, indoor storage okayed for old Kmart. The former Kmart building will soon have a tenant. Danville Alderman approved a special use permit for McCormick Family Investments to renovate the space into an indoor storage facility. We think Danville is a great community for this, said Jenny Kirby with the Fishers, Indiana-based McCormick Company, which specializes in converting large former retail buildings into climate-controlled storage under the Market Square brand name. There's plenty of demand. Kirby said the company should close on purchase in early December and spend the winter months renovating the more than 80,000 square foot building at 2722 North Vermilion Street, which is adjacent to the Village Mall. It's been vacant for about a year. Sears Holdings, the parent company of Kmart, announced last spring the closing of the longtime Danville store. And Vermilion County Republican women, state senator to speak at GOP event in Danville. The Vermilion County Republican women are hosting a wine and cheese reception from 5:30 to 7 p.m. today at Old National Bank at 2 West Main Street in Danville. The event, which will feature State Senator Jason Berrickman, Republican from Bloomington, as the guest speaker, is an opportunity for people to get to know local candidates running for office in the 2018 elections and to sign their petitions. Also scheduled to attend, Vermilion County Board Chairman Mike Moran, who is a candidate for the Illinois House in the 104th District. Just about a minute left, so I'll just run through some news briefs. Group seeks donations. Members of the Comeback Committee seeks donations for the 21st Annual Hot Dog and Marshmallow Roast set for October 27th at Carver Park. Clyde Butler, founder of the group, said organizers hope to receive donations of hot dogs, potato chips, soda, and other foods. The roast will be from 5 to 9 p.m. October 27th at Wilbur Atkinson Softball Field in Carver Park. The field's lights will be on. To make a donation, contact Butler at 497-6565. So, and in Tilton, the Tilton Fire Department is opening their Foundry of Terror. $10 to get in for adults 13 and up, and $5 for children. Open on Fridays at 7 p.m. So, anyway, that'll be it for today, Thursday, October 19th, 2017. Hope you all have a good week. Supposed to be nice and warm weather. So hope you have a good week and go Cubs go. Sorry I had to say that. Anyway, hopefully I'll see you again next week. Take care. Bye.